time at the Browns quarterback room. We got plenty to get to here. On the fan, though, today is Jim Schwartz Day. In case you have you heard about this? Have you seen about this? The Browns interviewing their defensive coordinator today. Tommy Rees also getting an interview. They should interview him in tandem.
Like together?
Yeah, like just in a big conference room. And then did the, like, so you're sitting here and you're Jimmy. And then it, like, here's Tommy. Here's Jim. And you go, Tommy? Okay. Jim?
Like same question to you?
Yes.
Now go ahead and you can
but
answer.
But you move your chair to where it looks
You just swivel.
Yeah. And that's, and so it feels like a one-on-one, but in all reality, you're really just knocking these two out of the way.
Sounds awful.
You gotta have a little imagination.
It sounds awful. Well, no, but it would be presented like you guys are going to basically be co-head coach, right? Is that how the presentation would be? So you might as well get good working together.
No, I want this with Mike McDaniel and John Harbaugh.
Well, okay. That would be nice too.
I want this with all. Really put a little pressure on the coach themselves.
Oh, you know what? You should be the first one to say, I want John Harbaugh as my head coach and I want Mike McDaniel as my OC and we'll stop at nothing and that's got to be the answer. You should be the first one to say that because I love the idea with head coaches out here. Everyone's putting unrealistic expectations attached to all of this.
Listen, what I want is I want John Harbaugh as my head coach. Jim Harbaugh is my OC.
Yeah, there we go. Now we're talking.
And I'm just thinking out loud here. Mike Tomlin is my defensive coordinator.
I want to trade. I'm gonna make a trade happen as well. We just acquired Justin Herbert.
Yeah, but they give us a first rounder for Justin.
Good. Now we're talking.
Yeah. Now we're on social media.
We are where the internet lives now.
You're welcome, Chargers. But to go ahead and talk about Lamar Ball, as many people are calling it, Lamar Jackson, John Harbaugh. Was it all a failure? We'll never know, but we will because we're going to get him on the show right now. Rob Long of 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore joins us on the Make It Right Call Kyle Wright hotline. Hey, Rob, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I think we're a little stir-crazy, maybe a little slap-happy. It's been a week already. How about you guys in Baltimore? How's the reaction to Harbaugh firing?
Oh, I got fired.
Did I just break the news?
Internet's been down.
I'm messing with you, yeah. You know, it's like, I think a lot of the fan base was ready for it to happen, but I think we were surprised that it actually happened. When you've had a guy for 18 years, it's hard to imagine that you're actually going to have the plug pulled. But overall, I believe, personally, it was time.
Were the fans, so were they were ready to move on with Harbaugh then? It feels like we've gotten such little pushback on the idea that Harbaugh at this point just isn't the same Harbaugh he once was. When you watch these games, when you see the loyalty to Munkin that he displayed, all these things, do you feel like that sense is true, that we now have a older, different, not as good Harbaugh if we were in fact able to land him?
No. See, Harbaugh is an administrator. He's not really a guy that's going to influence the game. When the game begins, he's the guy that's going to influence the game before the game begins. He's an administrator. He's a CEO. He's not a game day difference maker.
So what's the right replacement for John Harbaugh look like?
Well, it might be for Cleveland because that's what Cleveland needs, I think. I think Cleveland needs an organizational guy, a guy that steers the ship and gets you back in order. That's what we needed here in Baltimore when he first got here. But now you're at a point where you need a little bit more, which is human nature. It's not, there's no disrespect to part ways with him. I think Steve Bisciotti, the owner, felt the pulse of his team and felt like you needed a jolt. You need some new blood in here to give a new message because evidently this message now is stale.
Have you taken any calls in your morning show about the idea that any fans at all wanted Harbaugh over Lamar?
No, I'm not saying no one did. I don't recall getting those calls, though.
Okay,
you may have a few people who believe maybe a total change, Harbaugh and Lamar, maybe one or two, but I'm not saying only one or two people in Baltimore felt that way. I'm sure more people in Baltimore felt that way. Lamar Jackson is a polarizing figure in Baltimore, which I can't understand. He's a two-time MVP. You could argue that he should have been a three-time MVP. And when he took over as quarterback, his rookie year, the team was 4-5. They finished up 10-6 in the playoffs. And he goes from being that running quarterback who was a gimmick to an MVP his first full year, and the rest is history. John Harbaugh, on the other hand, is a coach that sat on the sideline with his headset and the microphone and allowed his offensive coordinator not to run the ball in the AFC Championship game. Then the next year you get a Hall of Fame running back, and then you find yourself on television against the New England Patriots, and you see two series in the fourth quarter where that Hall of Fame running back is not even on the field. And John Harbaugh has nothing to say about it other than it wasn't his turn to be on the field. Turn be damned. You know, the game is on the line. Get that guy on the field. That's who John Harbaugh has proven himself to be. He's a guy that, in my opinion, didn't make head coaching decisions when head coaches should make decisions.
So with that, Rob, considering how long the Lamar Baugh, as many people are calling it, I've heard in Baltimore as well, is that has gone on for 7-8 years, is overall, is it a failure? What happened with Lamar and Harbaugh?
If you think this team should have won a championship, yes, it's a failure. And I think this team should have won a championship by now, especially when you have the AFC Championship game at home against the Kansas City Chiefs, and it's obvious the Kansas City Chiefs weren't what they were at the top of their mini dynasty. And, and it's proven to be that itself after that point. I think it has been a failure. If you look at winning games and being relevant in the postseason, then it hasn't been. But that wasn't the goal of this team. The goal of this team was to win championships.
In your dealings with Harbaugh, have you found him to be a very spiteful person? The reason why I ask is because one of the angles, one of the hooks that the Browns would have in getting Harbaugh to come here is he'd want to play Baltimore twice a year.
I don't think he's spiteful to that point. Spiteful to the point of, when he didn't run the ball enough with Derrick Henry, Derrick Henry carried the ball 30-plus times the very next game, almost as if to say, are you satisfied? He's that kind of spiteful person, kind of petty. But I don't think he would choose Cleveland just for the case of playing Baltimore twice a year. No, I don't think he would do that. If he chose Cleveland, it'd be for that along with being back home because he thought you guys had a pretty good roster and a pretty good direction to get him back to championship level. But it wouldn't just be to play Baltimore twice a year, no.
Rob, I want to help you fix the Ravens. All right, you guys, I mean, a down year, this is just, it's a real crying shame what's happened here. I think you guys need to hire Matt Nagy. I think it just makes sense. You get an offensive head coach for Lamar. Look what he did sitting next to Mahomes in meetings. I think Matt Nagy is the guy that can get you guys where I want you to go.
You know, what I normally do is when I want to get better, I consult my rivals for advice to get better. So your advice doesn't mean anything to me, man.
That's fair.
It doesn't mean I see through that. I see through that. If Matt Nagy is here next year, I'm coming to Cleveland and you and me fighting.
All right. You know what? Honestly, I'll take that ass whooping if it means I get to watch Matt Nagy run your team to the ground.
So where's the comedian? Well, Richard Pryor, well, that's an ass whooping I got to take.
Now, seriously, though, do you think that Stefanski could end up being the coach there? Or is that what are your fans, what are the callers, what do you think about that?
If I could go off the top of my head, that's off of memory, I think Kevin Stefanski, as far as his fans in Baltimore, was probably the leader in the clubhouse. If not him, Kubiak. Those have been the top names. Also, Flores, his name has come up a lot. Those three names have come up a lot, but I think Kevin Stefanski is probably the leader in the clubhouse in terms of what the fans want, largely because he's 2-time coach of the year, and they believe Cleveland is the source of his failure, not Stefanski himself.
Is Linderbaum going to be back in Baltimore, or do you think he hits the open market this March?
I think he wants to be back in Baltimore, but I think he is the open market. I do.
Have you ever asked him how he feels about Cleveland this time of year?
I have not. I would love to keep him here because I think a lot of it. I'll give you an example. The Baltimore Ravens had Adafi Oweh on their roster. When they traded him, he had 0 sacks. Did you check what he did in Los Angeles with the Chargers?
Pretty good.
I think a lot of the issues in Baltimore have been development or the lack thereof. And I think Linderbaum is the guy that you don't want to let go of. I think you could do some things schematically that makes him even better at his job. You also have a guy named Isaiah Likely, the number 2 tight end here, who was underused, who probably, there's a rumor that he had a good riddance to Harbaugh party the day that Harbaugh was fired. I don't know if I believe that, but I think that rumor started because people in Baltimore knows he wasn't a fan of the scheme here in Baltimore.
Is Harbaugh too loyal to Monken?
Yes. In a word, yes. He's always been too loyal to his coaches, and that was the subject of his demise. Many people say, you know, he fell on the sword for Todd Monken. This is my theory on that. If he fired Todd Monken, he knows because players wanted him gone. So now he loses to the players, and essentially he loses power. And Harbaugh's a big authority guy. He wants the power. We know that by him. So he didn't really fall on the sword for Monken. It's basically his power play. I'm not letting go of Monken. And if I keep him, I keep power. If I let him go, I lose control.
Rob, great stuff, buddy. I'll see you in roughly 3 weeks for my ass whooping, and we'll catch up with you down the line.
Man, I don't want to fight him too old for that, so I'm hoping you're wrong and we don't get Matt Nagy, because I don't want to fight.
It's the most I've been hurting for an ass whooping in a while, Rob. It's really, I could really use this one, buddy.
You guys are great, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate you, buddy. Rob Long, 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore. I'd take that ass whooping for Cleveland.
Oh, you'd be smiling.
I'd get a damn statue built if the Ravens went 2-14 or 2-15. That's how math works. Over the next 3 years.
A statue of what? A statue of Matt Nagy or a statue of you getting your butt whooped?
No, it'd be me with like a broken leg and I'd be in like a full body cast.
And then you're just doing the LeBron, like Cleveland, this is for you.
But if they also had like Vanessa also in bronze, but giving me a, you know, sponge bath, I would take that too.
No, that's what we call it these days.
Yeah. Easy. Woo! I'm horny. Rob Long on the Make It Right Call Kyle Wright hotline will react to his strong words about John Harbaugh and the waiting game for Harbaugh in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Hey, it's Dustin joining me on the hotline as we.
Yes,
was
I do.
Was he a second round draft pick for the Browns?
I believe
back in
he
the day?
Was out of Oregon.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's TJ Ward.
With Skip Bayless.
With Skip Bayless on the Arena Gridiron.
Yeah, like Cleveland, dealing with the reporters and the media in Cleveland is misery. And every year they're looking for a fresh start, no matter who it is and where they at.
Are we miserable? We go to Mary Kay to answer that question. Hello, Mary Kay.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing wonderful. Are we miserable, Mary
Kay? He's not talking about you, Mary Kay. He's talking about Zach Jackson and Jason Lloyd.
He might very well be. Who knows
who
he's talking about?
He's not talking about you.
Dan Lobby was not here when TJ Ward was here. Mary Kay, thoughts?
Well, first of all, I heard that clip earlier this morning. I was up listening to things and reading things earlier, and I ran across that, and I was like, what? It's just so funny because TJ Ward had a great relationship with the media here in Cleveland when he was here. He was treated very, very well. And I, for one, had a really, really nice relationship with TJ Ward, a good working relationship. Oh. So I was very surprised to hear him say that. And I hope I run into him on Radio Row at the Super Bowl or somewhere, because I would like to ask him to sort of explain exactly what he's talking about, because you know, I was here for all of that, and that was not my experience at all with TJ Ward. He really, he was great with the media, and he got a lot out of that. So I don't know where he's going with that.
Whoa! Showdown. Woo! At the Super Bowl. Mary Kay, Boss Ward. Mary Kay.
Well,
emptying out the clip.
I have
Mary
to laugh.
Mary Kay.
I have to laugh, Mary Kay, because a lot of this is going to be shaped by, you know, your experience. And then that's how perspective works. Think about his first year. 5-11, Eric Mangini, his second year, 4-12, Shurmur, 5-11 the next year, Shurmur, 4-12, Chudzinski. So, yeah, I don't think we were tethered to those head coaches. We probably wanted a fresh start. Then he goes to Denver, John Fox, 12-4, he steps away, Kubiak, 12-4, Super Bowl, and then 9-7 the next year. Yeah, I'm sure he thinks the Denver media is warm and fuzzy. They won a Super Bowl.
Mm.
Ask some guys that were on... Ask Richard Jefferson about the Cleveland media. I bet he has nice things to say, because we won a championship.
Boy, Mary Kay going Suge Knight at the BET Awards, listening to you. My goodness.
No, it's just funny because if I recall correctly, and that was a long time ago, but I think that I'm pretty sure that we helped TJ make it to the Pro Bowl by writing lots of nice things about him. And, you know, I just recall him being very accommodating, and it wasn't bad at all. I mean, he was sort of a go-to guy when you needed a great answer about something. Now, I think what's happening right now is it seems like there's a lot of vitriol or rhetoric coming out of Cleveland about the whole Shedeur Sanders situation.
Now, why is
that? The truth of the matter is that's not everybody. There are some people that are you know, coming out and railing against Shedeur, like Jason did on your air the other day. And I think that people out there, some of the national media members, might hear some of that and just think that, you know, we're all lumped together in that category. But I think for the most part, the local coverage of Shedeur has been very positive and very good.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us here on the Make It Right Call Kyle Wright Hotline. So, all right, we got to move on to the coaching search here and all the ins and outs and what have yous. Mary Kay, let's go to some names that maybe, do you know any names that we aren't talking about that we should be talking about right now?
No, I don't know any names that we haven't talked about. I mean, I threw a big comprehensive list out there the other day. I left some people off the list that I wasn't too sure about, but I think, you know, I didn't have Dan Pitcher on that list, and I didn't have Adam Dirty on that list. So, yeah, I think there probably will be more names like that that will come out that we haven't heard yet, because Andrew Berry is conducting this search, and he's going to reach back into other parts of his career. He's going to think outside of the box, and he's going to do some cool things, I think, in this search. And I think we're already seeing that. So, yes, I do expect that we will hear some names and see some candidates that we hadn't thought of at all. But I don't know who any of those are yet.
Give me a percent chance that we land John Harbaugh.
You know, I know the Browns really like John Harbaugh, but the thing that happens in a situation like this, if you get an idea that a candidate might have something hot going in another city, you don't want to be turned down by a lot of people. So if you think that, let's say, he's going to get the Giants job, and it seems pretty clear that that's going to happen, then you're not going to interview him. So as of right now, I don't know if they're going to, I'm sure they called. I'm sure they're one of the teams that called. But I don't know if they will actually go through with an interview, because you work the back channels and you find out if a coach actually, you know, would consider your situation or whatever the case may be, or you would consider him. You walk through all that, you talk through all of that, and then you decide if you're going to actually throw him onto the list. And right now, I do not know if he's on the list.
And, you know, it's funny, it was years ago, but I'm sure, Mary Kay, you remember the speculation that the Browns had tried to procure his brother at one point. That became kind of a fun story back in the day, and obviously we know how that turned out. So there's certainly a connection.
At least they got Joe Banner out of here quicker.
Got his Ohio roots, as we know. I think his mom grew up rooting for the Browns, his parents.
Oh, 100%. I mean, his parents went to the Browns game for their honeymoon the day after they got married. So his mom, Jackie, went to Shaw High School. They've got very deep roots in Cleveland. They grew up going to Browns games, and back then it was Indians, but, you know, Guardians games, and their whole family are Browns fans. So they definitely have the connections and the ties here, but that's not going to determine where you end up. Yeah, this was his hometown team. But I don't know what he is going to do. Like I said, I think he's probably going to be a front runner for the Giants job and maybe a few other jobs. And it's interesting because he's going to be vying for jobs with Kevin Stefanski. Kevin was in New York yesterday talking to the Giants. Today he's talking to the Raiders. So I don't think John is going to interview until next week, but I'm sure there are teams that are saving a spot for him.
All right, Mary Kay Cabot joining us. So you were the first to report, you know, some of the Browns' perspective interviews today with the in-house candidates. Are these legitimate interviews, or is this kind of like the Greg Williams, what was it, Kenny, New Year's Day interview that
hung over?
Many didn't exactly.
Well, that was just you.
Think like he was being given a shot.
No, these are legitimate interviews. These are definitely legitimate interviews. And actually, we've heard so many people in the organization already extolling the virtues of Jim Schwartz and talking him up. We've heard players do it. We've heard Jimmy do it. We've heard Andrew. We've heard Kevin Stefanski in his last interview at the podium after the Bengals game. So everyone seems to be touting Jim Schwartz for the job. I know he really wants the job. And I think this is a very legitimate interview. I think the key here is going to be, how are you going to put the puzzle pieces together? If you want to keep Tommy Rees in the building, you might have to do it one way. If you want to make sure that you keep Jim Schwartz in the building, you might have to do it another way. So I think that's part of it. I think the important part with Tommy, and I'm going to write something about this morning, is the fact that the intriguing and interesting thing about him in my mind is the fact that he's got more intimate knowledge about Shedeur Sanders than any of these other candidates. He can tell you exactly what you're going to need to hear and what you need to know about Shedeur. Can he be your guy or is he not your guy? So that's the conversation that will have to be had today, in addition to everything else that you want to show you can bring to the table. He's got that inside intel on Shedeur.
True or false, if Jim Schwartz is not the head coach, then he is gone and will not be the defensive coordinator next year?
It's hard to say. It's hard to say, because if you bring in, let's say you hire a Dan Pitcher, an offensive guy on that side of the ball, or even if you decide you're going to hire Tommy Rees, because that's the only way you can keep him. If you do that, then one of those young guys is going to want somebody like Jim Schwartz on the other side of the ball. It would, at that point, be up to Jim to decide after he gets this head coach interview, does he want to stay if he's not going to be the head coach? So, once again, you have to put the whole puzzle together. But, you know, right now, I would think that, you know, Jim has a pretty decent chance. I can't put a percentage on it, but it's a very, very legitimate interview.
Mary Kay with us on the show. So, you know, we've had our fun back and forth about the Super Bowl window, things like that. And I went, well, you know, they got to kind of agree there that they believe that they're a lot closer than what myself, Lima, and the fans feel, or they would have moved on from Andrew Berry. So it starts to lead me to believe that, okay, maybe Tommy Rees or one of these offensive names that people are not extremely excited about have a more legitimate chance, because maybe it's a fresh voice, but they'd rather just stay the course.
Well, you know, it's hard to say. I do think that, like I've said so many times on the show, and you guys made fun of me.
We don't make fun of you. We make fun with you.
that they are in the process of building their Super Bowl window, too. And the first layer of that has been laid. That was this rookie class. The second layer of that comes this year with this next rookie class, and they have money to go out and buy players and trade for players. So another big chunk of the contending window is coming in 2026. They have two first-round picks and whatnot. So I think the Browns loved what Andrew Berry did in this draft. I think Jimmy Haslam gave him a mandate to go out and absolutely nail this draft, and he did that. And now they want to give him a chance to do it all over again. And also, most importantly, to find the quarterback, whether he's in-house or whether he's not here yet. And they're going to give him that chance to do that. So I think it's a big, pivotal year. He nailed the draft like Jimmy asked him to do. Now he's got to nail the coach and the quarterback, the two most important pieces of this organization coming in the next year.
Is Shedeur Sanders guaranteed to be on the roster in 2026?
Well, I don't think anything is guaranteed right now. I would think that he would be. What he's not guaranteed right at the moment is the starting job for 2026. And I think we saw yesterday that the Saints did commit to Tyler Shough for 2026. I'm sure the Giants are committed to Jackson Dart. I'm sure the Titans are committed to Cam Ward. So of these rookie quarterbacks, at this moment in time, Shedeur is seemingly the only one that doesn't have that guarantee. But I think that's important right now. As you head into this coaching search, you don't want to have that coach painted into a corner and have him knowing that he has to start Shedeur Sanders in 2026. I think you want to be very open-minded about this, even though I know there's a lot of sentiment in that organization for Shador to be the starter in 2026. I think it's great that they're leaving their options open so that a new coach can come in here and decide his staff and decide his quarterback.
Mary Kay, one more question. What chances does Deshaun Watson have to start the season as starting quarterback in 2026?
Well, again, I don't know if I can put a percentage on it, but if they decide that they want to draft a quarterback, then I think Deshaun's chances of starting the season increase a lot. Once again, the new head coach is going to have a lot of say in this matter. If he likes Deshaun and thinks that he gives the team the best chance to win in the early going, and they have a rookie to go along with him, then Deshaun will start some games. If not, then he'll probably be around as a mentor like he was this year. He was a good football mentor to those young quarterbacks. Even Bill Musgrave said he didn't know what they would have done without him. You need that kind of veteran presence in a quarterback room. So it's going to depend on who the head coach is, and it's also going to depend on who the young quarterback is. Is it Shador or is it a rookie? If it's Shador, I would think that he would start ahead of Deshaun Watson week one.
Okay. Mary Kay, we thank you very much for the time. All the very best to you and yours. Thank you again.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Mary Kay Cabot. On the Make It Right, call Kyle Wright Hotline.
He's pro Stefanski.
I don't know what direction he's going to go.
He is.
But I'm locked in.
Who knows? I mean, it's been a tough interview to prep for. I will say that.
He always throws us curveballs, too.
That's true. That's what we like about him.
In fact, I want to have Matt go back and find what he said about Harbaugh a couple weeks ago. Maybe it was even last week when we asked him about the possibilities of Harbaugh. Mm-hmm. So if memory serves me right, I think he was basically told us we're dreaming and that's it.
Yeah. Well, here's the problem. I don't remember multiple weeks ago. This is the great thing. My brain is like now an Etch-A-Sketch at 40.
Oh, yeah.
So
oh, that's fun.
I might remember a couple individual takes that I've had, but everything else, like I got kids' names. I remember my kids' names, and you know what? That's a real win for us.
No, we have like an all hands on deck meeting, and you got reminded of it earlier today, and you're like, I get an email on that. Like, did anything happen there? And it's like, not only do you have an email on it, you RSVP'd yes.
I clicked yes.
You did the whole everything.
I would say I probably was the first yes in the whole darn thing, but we got a lot of Brown stuff. Obviously, we mentioned Kevin Stefanski interviewing in New York today, but the names coming out, Jim Schwartz and Tommy Rees will interview for the Browns head coaching job. Dan Pitcher, Odd and Dirty. I'm trying to say it like Mark Hodges saying it. That sounds very English, so I'm trying to do that. Todd Monken, so many names, so little time. Let's get another one. Ashley Bastock at Cleveland.com on the Make It Right, Call Kyle Wright Hotline. Joining us right now, Ashley, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. I mean, man, with the way this week has gone already, I'm expecting some kind of news to break while we're on the air at this rate.
Honestly, well, you know it's going to break right about the time we actually get a hold of Albert Breer. That's when it's really going to happen. That's when it's really going to go, because that's when it went yesterday. I guess, what was your initial reaction on John Harbaugh, and how realistic or unrealistic do you think that might be for the Browns?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, right? Because I think on the surface level, it's unrealistic. I will say I was surprised yesterday, just like how the news came down. It happened so fast. I mean, it seemed like things were trending that way just from an outside observer who doesn't cover the Ravens, that it was certainly a possibility, but it was still surprising. I mean, he's been there, what, 18 years? Like, I think when you have that kind of longevity at a place, it's still an element of surprise. And now, when it comes to the possibility of John Harbaugh in Cleveland, I say unlikely on the surface, because you look at the landscape, and I think John Harbaugh instantly becomes the hottest coaching candidate this cycle. He's going to usurp Kevin Stefanski, who I think had the inside track to being that person. But now it's unquestionably John Harbaugh. And you look at the seven or so teams with openings, and I do think the Giants, for multiple reasons, is the biggest / most attractive job. A young quarterback who people feel pretty okay about. And I think when people look at these vacancies, they think the quarterback situation, you want to be as positive as you can about that if you are a head coach or a soon-to-be head coach that has your pick of jobs. Now, but let's like look at this a little bit deeper. I guess Browns fans, if you're looking for reasons to be optimistic, and I'll preface this by saying this isn't reporting. It's just been me thinking about it the last 24 hours. John Harbaugh and the Ravens last year did want to draft Shedeur Sanders, right? We know that from reporting that came out a few months ago. So they had to at least like him a little bit. So that's thing number one. And number two is just the Harbaugh family, Northeast Ohio, Cleveland connection. We know him and Jim Harbaugh have talked fondly about liking the Browns when they were growing up. We know their parents went on their honeymoon to a Browns exhibition game. Like, there's all these, like, intangible things that make you start to wonder. I still think, hey, the Browns, John Harbaugh, might be unlikely, but I don't know. Never say never in this league, number one. And there are these kind of, like, weird little connections that are just enough to make you go, huh, like, I wonder, what if, what could this possibly take? What could this look like? And if I'm the Browns, I would be doing, obviously this goes without saying, whatever it takes to try to land the guy, right? Like, you have to when somebody like John Harbaugh becomes available.
All right. Well, I want to see if you buy into this, okay? And if you like it, then just, you know, credit me in the future on it. No big deal. But, like, I don't think it's going to happen, by the way. But, like, where my optimism comes from, yeah, is the idea that Deshaun Watson had 13 other teams that were interested, and he broke it down to a Final Four when everyone said there, yeah, was no chance the Browns could get him, and the Browns aren't even serious contenders and all this. They landed him. And so, like Barry, yeah, and Haslam have shown the ability to defy all odds. And if they want something done, they can get it done. And so that gives me some optimism there.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, JP, the Deshaun Watson trade and how the Browns executed that definitely framed a lot of how I view covering this team and covering the NFL in general. Like, I always talk about it when we bring up this sort of, you can never say never, because not only did people say all those things about the Browns, like, the Browns had been definitively ruled out from grabbing Deshaun Watson. They were out of the running. He was not considering coming here. And then they went back at it again with the fully guaranteed historic contract. So we have seen them operate in this space before where they've been counted out and then they get what they want at the very end. So I'm curious how that all could factor into it, you know, and it'll be interesting to see, I think, how this plays out. I think it's still fair to, like, wonder, hey, this seems like a pretty big long shot, right? But, I mean, the Browns would obviously would have to have interest in getting him. Everyone's going to have interest in getting John Harbaugh to their respective team.
Ashley, does Stefanski to Baltimore scare you?
I mean, I would kind of be shocked if that happened because, like, I don't know that it scares me. I guess it does from the perspective of there's a chance at revenge for two times a year. But look, I think it's unlikely because the Ravens need a defensive-minded coach. I actually think the Ravens, for their sake, it's a good coaching cycle to need a head coach for what they need. That defense is a mess. It needs to be remade. And there's a lot of really good, high-profile defensive names still floating out there. Now, these playoff teams, I think teams are waiting to kind of put in their requests, but we're going to see more of that as the weeks go on. Like, to me, when I saw that yesterday, I'm like, man, ironically, Jesse Minner, who comes from the Harbaugh family tree, kind of like makes perfect sense, the Chargers D coordinator, for what the Ravens need. So for that reason, I would be surprised if Kevin Stefanski landed there. But, you know, I think because Browns fans are so conditioned to these things not working out in their favor, and, you know, is Kevin Stefanski going to be the next Baker Mayfield? I understand some trepidation of, oh gosh, what if he ended up in Baltimore? But I don't think it's very likely.
I talked to a Bengals reporter today, and he made it seem as if Dan Pitcher is above the Browns. What's your read on Dan Pitcher?
You know, I don't think he's above the Browns because we haven't seen Dan Pitcher, like, do everything from scratch, right? I think he's a really interesting name, and especially from a quarterback development standpoint, but I still kind of think he's, like, under the radar, and, you know, that to me is like, you haven't seen him put it all together yet, where it's like assembling that offense from scratch, calling the plays, like finding your guy at quarterback. Like, you haven't seen him do that. So for that reason, I think there are some teams out there that would be a bit hesitant maybe to take a chance on him, and maybe him and the Browns would be at like a perfect spot for what each other needs. Like, he needs more of that experience and they need somebody to really work this offense. So I wouldn't say he is above the Browns. I think that's some Cincinnati perception of this team that's not entirely correct.
Yeah, they don't have a good perception of their own team, so I digress.
The quote was, we'll absolutely be a head coach one day. He's an idiot if he takes it.
Yeah. Did you reply, you're the real idiot? That's what I would have done. Ashley, this comes by way of one of the great listeners of the station, Roberto Shenanigans, and I just can't find a way to frame it better so I don't have to give him credit. Do you think Jimmy Haslam would be willing to dump Andrew Berry if that's what it takes to get Harbaugh?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. I think no, just because of the way Jimmy Haslam talked about Andrew Berry this past week. Now, I thought that press availability was interesting because every positive thing he said about Andrew Berry was all from like the last 8 months, right? So I don't know. I mean, who knows what Jimmy Haslam is thinking on any given day? I guess I should just say never, which is my typical answer to those sorts of questions. But it would be definitely like a shocking move if that were to happen. And I don't know why necessarily that would be John Harbaugh's condition for coming here. Like, if that was the only thing, that's kind of odd to me. But it's interesting, I still think, from hearing Jimmy Haslam and talking about Andrew Berry's accomplishments and mentioning the draft class and trading for Malik, or acquiring Malik Collins in free agency, trading for Tyson Campbell, Andre Schmidt. Those are all very recent things. So that sort of recency bias, it's very much a what have you done for me lately league. So I don't know, just always be aware of that and the tide, the potential for the tide turning, I guess.
Yeah, I told Coach Riz last night, you fire Berry to the moon if that's what it takes. Like, you can't let Andrew Berry stand in the way of landing John Harbaugh. If he wants to change out the people that everything down to who fills up the Gatorade in the cooler, I'm cool with it. Whatever you want, John.
That guy's been mailing in for years.
I always say that. But poor end of season reviews from that guy consistently.
Yep. I think his name's Jeremy. Ashley, the report here is Jim Schwartz and Tommy Rees going to be getting head coaching interviews for the Browns tomorrow. I don't know how to ask this in a more polite way. Are these courtesy interviews?
You know, I really don't think they're courtesy interviews, especially on the part of Jim, because, you know, we talked about this last week when my Jim Schwartz big feature story came out. Andrew Berry was the one who was so instrumental in getting Jim Schwartz to Cleveland in the first place. They obviously had their relationship from Philadelphia going back that far. So I think, especially on the part of Jim, this is not doing him a courtesy. I really think Andrew Berry and this front office and this ownership group believe he has earned this opportunity. Jimmy Haslam said they absolutely want to keep him in the building. They think he's a great coach. And I think from everything that I know, they also really like Tommy Rees and view him as this young offensive mind that is going to continue to gain traction throughout his career. Now, I said this last week too, like if I had to pick, Jim would be my pick between the two just because of the experience factor. And you do have to wonder, like, is Tommy Rees ready after only 1 year of calling plays in the NFL? And it's not like he's been in the NFL for an extended period of time like Kevin Stefanski was, even though he also only had 1 year of calling plays when he was first hired by the Browns. So I really don't think either are courtesy interviews. I think people in that building are very fond of both guys. But again, Jim Schwartz in particular, the long connection he has to Andrew Berry kind of points to that to me as well.
What name have we not brought up in this interview that you're fascinated by, intrigued by, want to see the Browns give a good look to, even if it's already on the docket that they are giving a good look to?
Ooh, let me think about that for a second, because, you know, the interesting thing with this coaching cycle is like there aren't a ton of offensive names that are really popping out. Like Joe Brady in Buffalo is the one people kind of point to. But look, I think the thing with Joe Brady is Buffalo's obviously had a lot of turnover with their offensive coordinators in recent years. It's not like he's the guy that found and developed Josh Allen. You know, that development of Josh Allen was really Brian Daboll focused more than anything. But the interesting guy, and I don't know how I would feel about this because I think I would still be pro Schwartz, but I've been writing this, and it's this idea of a lot of these defensive names that people are throwing out, Jesse Minter, Chris Shula, Aden Durdy. I'm still trying to figure out how to say that name, guys.
We are sitting here. We are too.
He did get an interview. But all of those guys, their defenses couldn't be any more different from Jim Schwartz. But there's one guy whose name keeps getting thrown out there who does run a similar system, and it is Robert Saleh. So the interesting thing about Robert Saleh, too, is we know they brought him in for an interview the last time they were hiring for head coach. And if we remember, Kevin Stefanski, they brought him in for an interview in 2019. Obviously, he didn't get it. They went with Freddie. But then they brought him back. So basically, like, we've seen these guys bring somebody back who they have previously brought in. So I would say keep an eye on it. I would still prefer Jim Schwartz. Like, if you love this defense, want to keep it together, and you're going to hire a defensive coach, I don't know why you just wouldn't make it Jim Schwartz at that point. But it'll be interesting to kind of see what other offensive names emerge. Like, I'm really curious, outside of Todd Monken, who that might be, because I think like that's the route in theory they should be going, is someone to overhaul this offense. But I'm also like, can you hire a Jim Schwartz and then just get a really good offensive coordinator that you feel very passionately about? And that's another path I'd be curious to see them take.
It's like the old song used to sing, Ashley, "Try to Catch Me Odd and Dirty." I think we all remember. I remember that song. It was a great song. Many people liked it. Ashley, great stuff. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ashley.
All right. Thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.
No, sold a great joke there. I mean, we're friends here. Ashley continues to join us. I don't see anybody else making the Odd and Dirty musicality there. Bleep, everyone. You too. You too for that face. Yeah, the pouty bird face. Yeah.
Every now and then you just hang me out. I'm like, we're just going to let this one sit. You can figure this one out on yourself.
Mm-hmm. Ross Tucker coming up at 4 o'clock today. Mm-hmm. We'll react to what Ashley had to say. And Jonathan Peterlin could learn a thing or two from old Mel Kiper Jr. In 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Minutes away, we'll argue the PI call again. I'll ask Nathan at the end of the interview what he thought. He's a football guy. You know he saw it. Talk to Nathan about that coming up here momentarily. Also, Al Michaels coming back to Amazon at age 82 for 2026. I'm not going to put Nathan in this position right now because he's a broadcaster and I don't want to ask him that. Can I just give you my opinion of it? I've been an Al Michaels defender for a long time. The last couple of years have gotten pretty stale. Like, he sounds like he's bored. He's made me really appreciate Keith Jackson. Like, he called that Texas-USC national championship game, and then he called it quits, and he said he just didn't like his own performance. I'm like, oh, there was a couple of flubs here and there, and I only noticed after he said it. I was like, oh, there's a couple of flubs here and there. He's like, it wasn't my best performance. I'm done. Walked away from it.
I just don't like that Al Michaels just doesn't seem into the games that he's doing.
That's true as well.
If once the announcer doesn't care, like, the good thing about the younger broadcasters is they will sell you on a game even if it's two terrible teams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how many times this year, how many terrible games are the Browns involved in? But most of the announcers seemed excited to be there and trying to at least sell you on, hey, maybe Shador can be good. Maybe Dylan can be good.
Look at this. Hold on.
Even if when they actually watch the game, they're like, oh, there's one drive. But they want you to keep watching. Kevin, Al Michaels doesn't care.
Kevin Harlan's actually younger than I thought. He's 65.
Okay.
Because I thought Kevin Harlan was in his 70s.
Such an early age.
But Kevin Harlan gets me excited about any game he calls, whether it be basketball, whether it be the NFL. He's always going to get me excited. Kevin Harlan is. We have a giveaway right now. Before we bring in Nathan, let's go ahead and give it away right now.
4-pack of tickets to the Fan Night Cleveland State Basketball on Thursday, January 15th at 7 p.m. at the Wolstein Center. We'll be there, and you get tickets at csuvikings.com/tickets. I heard some staffers are thinking about joining us for this event, so you never know who you're going to meet. Enter the word paint, P-A-I-N-T, by the end of the hour at 923thefan.com to get registered to win.
The Browns are announcing that they are interviewing Dan Pitcher today, so let's bring in Nathan Zagura. He's on the Make It Right Call Kyle Wright hotline. Nathan, hello to you. What can you tell me about Dan Pitcher of the Cincinnati Bengals?
Well, I know that Kenny's been in that organization for some time. Offensive coordinator currently is considered to be a very sharp young offensive mind, not the play caller down there. So that's obviously a different kind of step up when you go from that job to maybe being a play calling OC or even to being a head coach in the NFL. But the Browns, I think, are going to do a very thorough search. I think they're going to be looking at interviewing people now. Also for, you know, coordinators, that's what they're looking for ultimately. So I think they're going to cast a wide net here. And Dan Pitcher, obviously, is in the building today. Yesterday was Jim Schwartz and Tommy Rees, and you know, the two guys that are in-house. And Jim Schwartz, obviously, has been a head coach before back in Detroit, and had a pretty good quote, you know, when he said, when I took the job in Detroit, obviously following famously that 0-16 year, ends up taking them to the playoffs. He got fired after he went 7-9. He said, I'm around the point where I went 7-9, and that was good enough to get you fired, when previously 7-9 would have probably gotten you a parade. So,
wow. Great point.
It's going to be it is a good point. And, yeah, you know, he is a fiery guy, certainly a culture leader. The defense loves him. And I think, you know, it's pretty obvious that the Browns would like to keep him and his staff involved going forward. And why wouldn't you? You know, the defense has been excellent. And I think you look at our position coaches on defense, Jacques Cesaire is excellent with the defensive line. I think Jason Tarver might be the best linebacker coach in the NFL. It really doesn't matter. Look at what Devin Bush did. Look at Carson. So everybody's gotten better that's been with him. Brandon Lynch with the corners, I think, will be defensive coordinator someday. And same with Coach Bonda, who was a defensive coordinator at the U and in college with the safeties. He saw Ronnie Hickman have such a great season this year. So, yeah, I think they want to keep that defensive staff together, and we'll see how that ultimately plays out. And so that lends to, you know, does Jim Schwartz become the head coach? Do you bring in an offensive head coach? Do you bring in a CEO type? And I'm sure you guys are going to ask me about, you know, John Harbaugh, and then get a younger OC in there, or keep Tommy Rees in there. It's kind of wide open, kind of the direction this thing could go for the Cleveland Browns.
Hey, you know what? We'll ask the effing questions around here. Don't you tell me what you want me to ask you or not.
Nathan, the tenor of yesterday was very interesting, that they jammed two of these guys that are in-house. I imagine they have been talking to them about, you know, if the Browns are as open as I would like to think they are and as professional as they are. I'd like to think they've been picking the brain of these guys throughout the process, trying to figure out how this team, you know, could lose the way they did, you know, for 2 years consecutively. And given all of that, you know, what did you make of yesterday and how much they are truly entertaining both those candidates?
You know, those are discussions and decisions that are way above my pay grade. I am not on the coaching search committee. So I would imagine anybody they interview, they are entertaining seriously for that position, or at least for a significant position in our organization. So, you know, yesterday, I think you start in-house, they're there. You've had conversations with them. You know them already. So I think it's a little bit different from bringing somebody in from another organization. And yeah, so I think that's how you kicked it off. You kicked it off with the in-house candidates. And as I mentioned, Jim Schwartz, you know, he has that head coaching experience from his time in Detroit. And then Tommy Rees is considered kind of one of those young stars who was, you know, had Belichick knocked on to North Carolina. There are reports that he was the favorite to be the head coach there, and that, you know, a lot of colleges are interested in him as a head coach. So I know the people in the building were very fond of Tommy Rees, his competitive fire. They thought that, you know, he did do a very good job with the young quarterbacks and can relate to a young quarterback, which likely the Browns are going with one either in-house or from the periphery outside of the building. So, yeah, I think everybody's getting a real shot. And I think part of this is to understand what's going on, you know, in your building, and understand what's going on around the league with guys who have been successful.
Nathan, do you think that we're done with the process here? Like, after Wild Card Weekend, could we be talking about other coaches possibly interviewing with the Cleveland Browns?
Oh, I think absolutely. And there's a couple of names, you know, that would immediately come to mind. And the first one for me would be Mike LaFleur with the LA Rams, who was, you know, was here in 2014 on Kyle's staff, was with Kyle in Atlanta, with Kyle in San Francisco, a guy who, you know, then went to the Jets with Robert Saleh, didn't work out for those guys there, but now has been the OC for Sean McVay with the Rams this year. So not eligible to even request yet on him, but he's somebody I think that would make a lot of sense. And then, you know, there are rumors out there that should the Steelers get bounced in an ugly fashion, that Tomlin could be available, that should the Packers get bounced in an ugly fashion, that Matt LaFleur would be available, which would be just nuts in my mind. But then all of a sudden, you know, those are candidates that I think will be very, very hot. I think Mike McDaniel is a candidate that's going to be very hot. Now, does he end up being a head coach, or is he better suited to be an OC? I don't know, but I saw Detroit, you know, put in a request to interview with him for their OC job, and that's feels like, my goodness, that would be a home run hire for the Detroit Lions.
I go out and about a lot, and I have a lot of market research. And I had to do a lot of errands yesterday, having to run into a lot of listeners. They don't seem to be down with Mike McDaniel, man. Now, part of that is that the Browns smoked him just a couple of months ago. That's fair. But, you know, they just don't seem to be down. The sunglasses, the pants, the whole thing. Some people came after me for it. I'm like, hey, if you win the AFC North, you wear whatever you want out there. It doesn't matter. But, I mean, there's a lot of people. They just did not seem to be down with the whole Mike McDaniel thing just from the very beginning of it.
As a head coach or as an offensive coordinator?
Oh, as a head coach. As a head coach. I think he's a good offensive mind. I think he's great at scheming running games, which we always need the run to open up the pass. I think he's very good at that. But as a head coach, there were a lot of people going, oh, I don't know about that.
But I think there are a lot. Listen, it's he has a different stylistic presentation than I think a lot of the head coaches in the National Football League. He's a guy that I stayed in touch with. He was our wide receivers coach, everybody knows, in 2014. And so when we played, you know, when he was under Kyle with the Niners, when we played them, I would always kind of talk to him before the games, and same as since he's been the head coach with the Dolphins. He's a great guy. I wonder for him if he would rather be an OC than a head coach as well. You know, some of the things that came out of Miami about were just kind of locker room accountability, things like that. But there's no doubt that that guy can coach and scheme up an offense with the absolute best of them. So if the Browns do go in a scenario where it's either, you know, a defensive head coach or Jim Schwartz or a CEO style head coach, and they and, you know, Tommy decides he wants to go somewhere else, or they make a change there, I think Mike McDaniel, and I think Tommy's done a great job. It's such an interesting situation right now where you're looking for a head coach, but you've got kind of your whole staff here and you don't know how that's all going to play out at the end of the day to talk about these things. But, you know, Mike McDaniel certainly would be somebody that would be at the top of, I think, any team's list if they were looking strictly for an offensive coordinator.
All right, Nathan, if during the interview process, the candidate is asked by Andrew Berry, what do you think of our quarterback room? And that candidate says, I think we need to find other quarterbacks. Does that disqualify that candidate?
Absolutely not. No.
Okay, go ahead.
No, and that was said, I think that was said in the press conference, and that's my sense of it, is that, you know, you don't, you can't say you have to come here and this is who you have to work with. I think that, you know, obviously Shador showed down the stretch to me stretches of excellent play. It was great to see him lead that game-winning drive. You can tell the teammates like him, but if that's not the cup of tea for the incoming head coach, that is not going to be a disqualifier, at least the way that I understand it. Again, I'm not making these decisions. I'm not privy to these discussions. I would say that reading the tea leaves from the press conference, that no, that the head coach is going to be in charge of this football operation. And obviously the two most important things going forward, as we're in day five of the most critical 120 days from Jimmy Haslam, is who's the head coach and the leader of this organization going to be on the football side? And then who is going to be the quarterback that we want to go with? And so in-house, we certainly would know what that answer is. And if not in-house, you know, there are guys like a Malik Willis, you know, people who could be available via trade, things of that nature. But I don't think I don't think they're telling head coaching candidates, this is who you have to play at quarterback. I think that would make it very difficult to guarantee that you got the guy that you wanted.
Well, it does make it sound like then 2026 will be up for grabs at that position.
I think it depends. If you have a head coach who comes in that absolutely loved Shador in the pre-draft process, was somebody that wanted to bring them into their organization, liked what they saw, and they say, you know what, we're going to go with that, then I think you would have a definitive answer on that. If not, you're right, it could be open, and I think we're going to have a lot of answers about that position kind of between the hiring of this head coach, because I'm sure that is one of the things that they will be asked at that press conference, right? I think that we'll have real clarity on it almost immediately if he says this is how we're going to go, or we're going to go look outside and try to bring in the best quarterback available. And then if that's the case, you know, you'll have a real strong eye on free agency. And I think Malik Willis is a guy that I know the Browns liked a lot, and had the Titans, you know, not taken Malik Willis in the third round that year, which was the year the Browns made the trade for Deshaun Watson, I think Malik Willis would have been a Cleveland Brown. So I do think that that's a connection, and he's played really well in Green Bay. So I think that those are kind of the two paths that you could see this organization going, but I think that's ultimately going to be at the discretion of the head coach in collaboration with Andrew Berry.
Yeah, because I tell you what, that is one of the reasons where, and I think that a lot of people have taken sides one way or the other about Shador, and they have really put their heels in. And I'm going, guys, I'll just tell you how I feel right now, Nathan. This isn't even a question. I'm just running my opinion by you, my feelings here. It's like, I really don't know if I want to go back into the first round for Ty Simpson. I don't think I do. If they really feel strongly about Malik Willis, or certainly Mac Jones, or one of the other ones, I'll listen to that. but I don't want to just force a big investment on a quarterback. And I just want to kind of give, if it's given Shador a chance, it's fine. But it's not like, hey, it's got to be Shador no matter what. Like, that's not where I'm at. So that's why I kind of want to talk to John Harbaugh, because it's like, okay, you guys definitely liked him to some level.
Yep.
What did you really like about him? And was there anything that we did? Forget the podcast and all the other crap. I want to know from an NFL coach, what did we do that you liked? What do you think that we did that we messed up on with him?
Yeah, I think that would be, listen, I think John Harbaugh is a guy who's coached for 18 years in the league and has 180 regular season wins. He's averaged. So it makes sense to me that he would be kind of the number one candidate out there. It makes sense. And so he is somebody that I imagine every team with an opening is going to interview. And as we've read, you know, there are teams without openings that are interested in him. And would not surprise me at all. Try to bring him in and make a change from an existing situation. I think one of the reasons that Mike McDaniel, who was there initially, is now available is because of John Harbaugh. So, yes, I would absolutely want to pick his brain on a. Then, you know, I think a guy like John Harbaugh comes into a situation that's not like, hey, this is the situation you're coming into. Here's what we would like it to be. I think it's John Harbaugh is going to go wherever he goes and says, this is who I want. This is the organization and this is how I want it to be. Whether you're talking about GMs, whether you're talking about who the coordinators are, whether you're talking about who the quarterback is. I think John Harbaugh, wherever he goes, is going to have full say of exactly what that organization is going to be while he runs it.
All right. Did you have a chance, Nathan, last night to see that PI call at the end of the game?
Well past my bedtime. However, this morning, yes, I watched all the highlights and I'm happy that we will get one more week of the Michael Irvin experience that we're getting, which has been, I think, one of the greatest stories in sports. It's just one of the more fascinating things to watch.
Will he make it to next week, Nathan?
That's a great question. I mean, listen, he is a never-ending energy. A guy 60 years old. It's really incredible what the feats that he is pulling is pulling off right now. But and I really think, and I said this on Browns Daily, like, everything is in play in the national championship game. Like, I could see if Miami's up 5 and a guy breaks it down the sideline and it's going to take the Canes out, that Michael Irvin tackles this man or the U. Like, I think everything is in play right now with the way that he is acting on the sidelines. Nonetheless, I did see the end of the game. I saw that. Like, it's hard. Could it be pass interference? Maybe, yes. But I think that in those situations, it's tough. It's a very tough one for the officials. And it's kind of like at the end of an NBA game, you let them play a little bit because the repercussions of the flag are so significant. Now it's different than it is in the NFL where it would be a spot foul. I don't know. It's a tough one. I think it probably, if you're going strictly by the letter of the law, was it pass interference? Yes. I think under the circumstances and knowing what's happening at that exact moment in the game, I'm fine with it not being called.
I am not. Bad calls, a missed call. I know it's a Hail Mary type of situation.
That has to be approached. Yeah, right.
But man, he grabbed, like, if they're just arm fighting, if he even grabs an arm, all right, fine, whatever. But he got him by the shoulder pads, and then he got him by the neck. And I'm thinking he turns his whole body. That's my problem.
And listen, like I said, I think that by the letter of the law is it a penalty? Yes. Again, because it's college, it's 15 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have, they still would have had to chuck one into the end zone. Like, in that sense, it's different than the NFL. Like in the NFL, if you do that, you're kind of saying, okay, this is going to be the outcome of the game. Now the defense have a chance from a yard out, but it's a bigger deal. So like I said, I wouldn't have had a problem had they thrown the flag. I don't really have a problem that they didn't throw the flag, given that we're talking about play that has a 1% chance of being successful anyway.
Nathan, thank you very much for the time. You enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the playoff games. We'll talk to you next week, bud.
All right. You got it. See you guys.
So we'll go behind the scenes a little bit. Daryl Ryder is our Browns beat reporter. He's brought to us by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. We knew Daryl was going to join us today. We thought it was going to be by phone. And then Daryl had to come into the station for something, and he texted Dan, and he said, hey, I'll just come into the studio. And all of a sudden, the door flies open here. Daryl walks into the studio, and Daryl says this.
Dan Pitcher's probably going to be the next head coach of your Cleveland Browns.
Now,
Now.
And then you said,
why do you do this?
I'm probably going to keep the liquor store that's right down the street next to me in business for years to come.
This is like
Dan Pitcher is the offensive coordinator of the Cincinnati Bengals,
who doesn't call plays. And by the way, I just want to point out to everybody, Joe Burrow, T. Higgins, and Ja'Marr Chase do not play football for the Cleveland Browns.
Are they available via trade? Cloning? I mean, they're getting close with sheep. We might be onto something.
Well, wasn't there a rumor that Tom Brady was messing around with cloning?
There was a rumor that Tom Brady was messing with cloning.
He cloned his dog or something?
Yes, yes.
And then Daryl said, if you listened closely to Andrew Berry on Monday, Andrew Berry said,
yeah, they're looking for their next Kevin Stefanski.
And I looked up Dan Pitcher just so I had a little more background on him. Guess who Dan Pitcher looks like?
Kevin Stefanski.
Oh, my God, does he ever.
Andrew Berry has a type.
Either that or it feels like...
He's got a tinge of gray. He's got, like, all of his hair, like Kevin. He's got a tinge of gray, and he's got, like, I've got a beard, but I don't really have a beard. It's the same guy.
He's got a little Jeff Phelps in him, too. Receding hairline.
Oh, you son of a...
This is like Heath Bell coming in from the bullpen at the All-Star game and sliding into the pitcher's mound.
I got jokes. What can I say?
That's what I am right now. This is what I'm dealing with right now.
It's been a 5-12 season. I got jokes.
Okay.
Dan Pitcher's hairline's not receding. Mine left. It didn't recede. It just left.
No, you still got some on the sides and the back.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Daryl, don't tell me this.
Daryl's on fire.
This feels like Dan Pitcher, the way that you're presenting this feels like is when you'd look at the kids and be like, you have a Kevin Stefanski at home. You don't need a new Kevin Stefanski. You have a Kevin Stefanski at home.
Like I said, you have to really pay attention to what is said in these press conferences. And I'm not saying you don't. I'm talking to fans. You got to really listen to what's being said. And I've gone back and I've read the transcript a couple times. I've cut the video multiple times.
I love doing that as well, by the way. I go back and read the transcripts.
Yeah. I've clipped the video a couple of times too. And listen, the search should be over. It should be John Harbaugh. They should have kidnapped him last night.
Oh.
Put a blank check in front of him, a contract where he gets to fill in whatever terms he wants to fill in. Name your GM. If you want to keep Andrew, great. If you want to fire Andrew, go right ahead. Like, I just, if anything.
Head coach and president of football operations.
Yeah, whatever. Yep.
Operations.
Like, now,
make
I will
up a
say
title.
This.
The Browns are good at that.
Yes, they're very good at fancy titles, not very good at actually winning games with said fancy titles.
Oh, give it time.
Let's put it this way. If they won as many games as characters in the fancy titles, we would all be very, very happy and we'd not be sitting here doing this for like the 12th time in the last, I don't know, 15 years, right?
And if they're available to write our resumes, we're interested.
Exactly. It's like they put all the titles into ChatGPT. Hey, here's the role. Come up with fancy title for said role. Spit it out. That's the put in the prompt and then here, right?
Four words or more, please.
Can I interrupt for 1 second? So I saw the picture of Dan Pitcher.
You mean the picture of Dan Pitcher?
I was hoping you'd catch that. So I saw the picture on his bio, and then right beneath it, they have video of him speaking.
Mm-hmm.
He's wearing dark horn-rim Buddy Holly glasses and his goatee and beard a little more prominent. And I swear to God, I looked at it and I thought, what's Greg Williams doing on that Bengals stuff? He looks like Greg. So we're crossing Greg Williams and Kevin Stefanski. Now, that might be a football coach.
I really think they're going to go with unproven coordinator dude. Pair
you
him.
You really do.
Yes, pair them with an experienced offensive coordinator, Todd Munkin-Cough. And then...
And Tommy Reese is doing what?
You're going to have to, Jim Schwartz will have a decision to make. Does he want to stay on as defensive coordinator or does he want to go work for somebody else? Because he's going to interview for the head coach job here.
Tomorrow.
Right? And I mean, let's look at the human element of this thing first. Like, let's set aside the whole football and what fans may or may not want. The human element is usually, hey, if I'm interviewing for a promotion, but I don't get the promotion and they bring somebody else in, what do most people usually want to do? They want to move on, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, if the right opportunity presents itself, yes.
Yeah. And again, I'm not saying that that's what Jim Schwartz wants to do or is going to do. I'm just presenting that, like, that is just a fact of life. right? So I would like them to keep Jim Schwartz, regardless if he gets the head coach position or not, because I just think he's a phenomenal coach. I don't think him, even though him and Tommy Reese are both going to interview for this job, I don't think either one of them are getting this job. And
which
you know,
one has a better chance?
Well, Schwartz, because he's got the head coaching experience. Reese is 33, I believe, if I remember correctly. And listen, I mean, if the Bill Belichick thing didn't work out in North Carolina as far as them hiring him, Reese,
Tommy might have had the gig.
Tommy was expected to have that gig, right? You know, he was tied to the Michigan job. He's tied to a couple, I think it was UCLA as well. Didn't get those jobs. And look, I don't think he's ready to be a head coach yet. I think he needs a little more seasoning. But he's going to be a head coach in the next, I'd say, 2, maybe 3 years.
NFL more than NCAA?
I think he's going to have his pick. Honestly, I'd want the NFL more than the NCAA now.
It's a saner, it's a saner environment.
Yeah, well, and it used to be college football was the saner environment, even though it was just as difficult as far as, you know, flying around the country. But the college football landscape has changed so dramatically in the last 3 to 5 years. I'd rather have an NFL job over a college job.
Guaranteed contracts in the NFL. I don't have to re-recruit you every single year.
Right. Yeah.
It's a valid point. It's a really good point. Daryl joining us at studios, of course. All of his appearances are powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. So how... This is the part of this that's so interesting is the fact that we've seen this list of candidates and none of them have been Mike McCarthy. We haven't heard that name at all in there. We haven't heard
which, by the way, was a name I heard 2 weeks ago.
Do you think we're going to get those in a little bit, or do you think they really are going unproven coordinator and that's who they want to talk to?
I think so. Your list right now, let me just read the list. This is who we know the Browns are interested in, okay? Jim Schwartz, Tommy Reese, current coordinators here with the Browns. They both will interview tomorrow. Dan Pitcher, the Bengals offensive coordinator, does not call plays down there. That's Zach Taylor's job. But and again, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and Joe Burrow do not come with Pitcher. Okay, so like let's also keep that in mind.
Yeah.
But he's but got it. Jimmy. He's got close ties to Andrew Berry. They know each other very well. They work together. So, like, let's not discount that. The defensive coordinator of the Seattle Seahawks, Aiden Dirty, who does not call plays out there either.
No.
Okay.
And if he did, they might not understand him because his accent's so thick.
Well,
it's not that thick.
Rim shot? No,
it's
rim
not
shot?
That thick.
Oh, thank you.
It's not that bad.
Come on.
He's
it was a rim
not,
shot opportunity.
He's, not from like,
he's the defensive version for the Seahawks of Alex Van Pelt.
It's just right, giving okay. you a rim shot opportunity. Minigan's not behind the glass. He couldn't hit it.
I know. Todd Monken, the Ravens offensive coordinator, soon
like
to be
idea?
Former Ravens offensive coordinator. Yeah. Freddie Kitchens, offensive coordinator here. He is, you know, been requested for an interview. And then John Harbaugh, you know, they obviously reached out to him or his agent, I should say.
Have you
yesterday.
Heard anything, though, that like he's going to.
I think he's going to end up with the Giants or he's going to sit tight, see what happens with Buffalo and Green Bay in the playoffs because he has his pick. I mean, it originally was Kevin Stefanski was going to have his pick.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's John Harbaugh.
Yeah, Kevin's,
who has his
Kevin's
pick.
Number two on the hit parade now.
Also says the Packers lose their mind and fire Matt LaFleur. You beat him in Green Bay and get him on the play now.
Who you've already chatted with.
That dude knows his stuff. Yeah. That is a good football coach.
Riddle me this one, Daryl. You're around these coaches a lot more than we are. When do other factors come into play? There are only 32 jobs. You know, and with so
what do you
many,
mean by other factors,
well,
though?
With so many guys like coordinator du jour, I need to be a head coach. Boom. I don't care where it is. I'm taking the job.
Right.
Other factors. Harbaugh's family has Cleveland ties.
Yeah.
Harbaugh spent a lot of time here.
It's a great story. I just don't think it's going to happen
no matter how much time
I invested last night on X trying to will it into existence. I don't think it's going to happen.
Maybe some guys... I don't know Harbaugh. Maybe Harbaugh doesn't like New York and doesn't want the idea of living. You know, when do other factors like that come into play, or do they not?
I think Harbaugh wants the Giants job.
I think it'd be a great job.
I think
that's a great job. You've got a quarterback.
You got Jackson Dart there.
You've got a running back in Scataboo.
I mean,
you've got Malik Neighbors. Andrew Thomas.
If Buffalo
you got
opens
Burns
up,
on the other
that's
side
a great
of the ball.
Job.
And a couple other guys too. Abdul Carter's pretty darn good in his own right.
Here's the thing. The Browns job
Got that bad turf, though.
Is way, way down the list. It's in front, for me, the Browns job's in front of the Raiders, the Cardinals. And yeah. then it's the Browns. Because everybody else has quarterbacks or has invested in a young quarterback, okay? And they're not the Browns. Like, this is in the lower half of the available jobs.
I've seen rankings, and I think I've seen six different rankings of the jobs. The Browns have been ranked third by three of them.
It's because of the defense, Myles Garrett and Denzel Ward and Carson Schweinsteiger.
Pretty strong pillars.
But six by the other three.
It's an offensive league. Defense is not going to win you anything. Just look to the Cleveland Browns of 2024 and 2025.
You have to score points.
Right? I mean, you can't
need to score points. Yeah, yes, that is a factual statement.
Look how many games they lost.
Preferably
because
not
score
just
20.
By your defense.
You know, on that alone would get you that football consulting gig.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
By the way, I am available for consulting, Browns. I could really help you turn this thing around. His name is John Harbaugh. He would flip that organization on its head. Here's the thing. I do hope they at least they get the opportunity to interview him.
I hope they do, too.
Just from the standpoint of, John, tell us everything that's wrong with us and how you would fix it. And then I would have a recorder. I would record every word he said. And then as soon as he leaves the room to take the Giants or the Green Bay or the Buffalo job, I would implement every word he says. I would. I really would, because the way they do things doesn't work, okay? Like, if you haven't figured that out in 13 years, pretending to be the smartest people in the room is not helping you. It's not giving you any type of advantage. And listen, I'm all for the football nerdom. I really am. I'm not against it. One, I know there's people in town think I'm anti-analytics, and no, I'm not. I am for anything that can give the Cleveland Browns a competitive advantage, because if there's ever a franchise in pro sports that needs any competitive advantage, well, it's the Cleveland Browns. So I'm for whatever it takes to get that advantage. But the problem is, though, is they still don't know how to apply some of that sometimes. And I think that's something that Kevin struggled with. And, you know, you just can't do certain things if you don't have the players to accomplish them, right?
Do you have an extra couple of minutes?
Yeah.
I have a question that I didn't get in. We got to go to break. I want you to answer when we come back.
Now I'm on pins and needles.
Well, you want the question now?
No.
All right. Daryl with a question coming from me momentarily. Maybe he can give me some insight because I'm still trying to figure it out. It's Baskin and Phelps right here on the Fan. Daryl Ryder in studio. Andy, this is just a coincidence.
What?
I wasn't thinking about this.
Yeah.
What shirt am I wearing today?
Oh, you are wearing your Cincinnati Bearcats. Is that a Kelce sweatshirt?
No, I spent a lot of tuition dollars at Cincinnati, so I got a sweatshirt out of the deal.
Yeah, you didn't get it for free, I can tell you that.
I didn't get the sweatshirt for free, nor did the kids get the degrees for free. But I know another Bearcat. Guy who graduated from the University of Cincinnati, has worked his entire career in Cincinnati, other than from December of 2018 to April of 2020, when he worked right here at 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. We go to the Make It Right Call Kyle Wright hotline to talk to our former coworker, one of the really nice young guys who used to work here, James Rapine. Hello, James.
James.
December to April, you nailed it. What do you have? My rap sheet in front of you?
Yeah, I do, actually. Goodness. I'm looking at your LinkedIn page. I was just wondering if you even put us on it, and yes, you did.
Of course. Well, of course. Why wouldn't I?
How are you, man?
He's a creeper, isn't he? Phelps a creeper.
I'm doing great. It's good to be on with you guys. How are you?
It's good to have you with us, and I'm glad things are going so well for you in Cincinnati. You're doing all kinds of things. BengalsTalk.com, doing that. You've got your podcast on the Bengals, doing a great job. So congratulations on your success.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I go on SI.com, and there's your bright, smiling face all the time. So fun. That's fun stuff. Now, one of your other former coworkers, Daryl Ryder, you know Dangerous Daryl.
I do.
Daryl walked into the studio here yesterday.
Yeah.
He threw the door open, as only Daryl can do. Yep. And before we even had a chance to say hello to him, he said, "The new head coach of your Cleveland Browns, Dan Pitcher. That's who I'm going with." He was with us today. He backed it up.
Yeah.
T- tell us who Dan Pitcher is.
Well, if Dan Pitcher becomes the next head coach of the Cleveland Browns, I think everyone listening, at least from a Browns fans standpoint, should be excited. He's an offensive-minded, young, bright, and I say young, but that doesn't mean lacks experience. Bright, forward-thinking, offensive-minded coach that has worked his way up, has groomed Joe Burrow to becoming one of the best quarterbacks in the league, was part of Marvin Lewis's staff, has been here longer than Zach Taylor. And so when I was departing for Cleveland, he was already on the Bengals staff. Zach Taylor liked him so much, he kept him around. And a year later, he became the quarterback's coach, which was obviously a big position, taking over for Alex Van Pelt, another tie there from Cincinnati and Cleveland. And the key there is he's been working closely with Joe Burrow throughout Joe Burrow's six-year NFL career. And so when it comes to quarterbacks, offensive trends, scheme, all of the above, I think he checks all of those boxes. And I also like Dan's demeanor a ton. And weeks ago, I told people, hey, I know everyone's saying it's a down head coaching crop. Buckle up, because Dan Pitcher could certainly get a job. And I'm not shocked at all that the Browns are interested.
All right, so help me one more time. Explain to me how Dan Pitcher will take the Browns into the future and help them win.
Well, see, here's how I view it. And I wrote this yesterday at BengalsTalk.com. If I'm Dan, I would be so leery of taking the Browns job. It would be the exact opposite. It would be, tell me what quarterback I get to groom and make great, because right now I don't know where that is. Because I think he's exactly what you're looking for if you have enough talent to, like, everything people think Mike McDaniel is, I think Dan Pitcher is offensively. But I also think he has the right demeanor, carries himself the right way to be a head coach in the league. I think that's a good way to put it. And the only reason I'm using Mike McDaniel is because everyone knows him. Seems like everyone loves him. The whole country is going to be talking about how he should be their offensive coordinator or maybe head coach. And so that's what I think Dan can be, is from a football smart standpoint. He understands all the X's and O's elements of it. But he can also, I believe he'll be able to, you never know until you see it, but I believe he'll be able to handle all the head coaching stuff that comes with it, not just on offense.
James Rapine joining us, former coworker of ours and now in Cincinnati, doing all kinds of media stuff involving the Cincinnati Bengals and the Reds and the Bearcats. He's doing everything there is to do in Cincinnati. So Zach Taylor still calls the plays in Cincinnati. Is that a drawback to Dan Pitcher?
Sure. Yeah. That would be the one thing where I'm sure that there would be some growth needed there, some growing pains, however you want to put it. And I think part of why he doesn't call the plays here isn't an indictment on Dan Pitcher. I think it's because the Bengals hired Zach Taylor for a reason, right? And he's the offensive mind, and he's the constant. And they know that a guy like Dan could get a job elsewhere. And when he does, you don't want to be scrambling for your next play caller and disrupt what you have with Joe Burrow. And we saw that a couple of years ago when Brian Callahan got hired by Tennessee as the Bengals offensive coordinator. Well, then they promoted Dan Pitcher, and it was a no-brainer. And he was getting interest from multiple other teams. He was about to get on a flight and do multiple interviews for offensive coordinator jobs a few years ago. And it just timed out really well where Brian got hired and the Bengals didn't let him get on the plane and were able to keep him in Cincinnati. So, yeah, that from a long-term standpoint, I don't think is a major issue because he'll get those reps needed. He has called some plays in the preseason, but obviously hasn't done that in the regular season. So would there be a juggle early? I'm sure there would be. There would be some growing pains. But that, if I'm the Cleveland Browns, certainly wouldn't be enough for me to say no to Dan Pitcher.
If I would have told you Zach Taylor has a job but John Harbaugh doesn't last week, you would have told me what?
I would have said that's likely. I thought
you would have said that's going to happen. Okay,
not the John part. Like I'm not going to pretend that I knew that part was going to happen, but I knew Zach was staying. So like if you would have said who's more likely to go, John Harbaugh or Zach Taylor, I would have said John Harbaugh. And
it is a surprise for sure, especially because with 2 seconds to go, I felt like Tyler Loop was going to make that kick and the Ravens were going to win the division for the third straight time and be the only team that's ever done that in the AFC North. So I think that that's – it's wild to say out loud, but, yeah, I'm not surprised that Zach Taylor is still in town. And I'll tell you this, guys. Losing Dan would be a big loss for this Bengals organization, and I don't know who's in waiting. Like, last time it was, all right, well, Callahan's gone. Dan Pitcher will be the guy as long as it times out well, and it did. I don't know if there's someone in-house that they could go after. Maybe it's just bringing Brian Callahan back. Obviously, he's available at this moment, but it could hurt the Bengals as well and bolster the Browns in a big way if they do end up hiring Dan Pitcher.
James Rapine joining us. James covering the Cincinnati Bengals and our former co-worker right here at The Fan. The last year wasn't good for the Bengals at 6-11. Joe hurt his toe early on and was out a big portion of the season, and Joe Flacco comes in. We all know what's going on. Mike Brown has a reputation for not spending money, but he also has a reputation for being patient. Is he being patient here with Zach Taylor, who had 4 straight winning records before this last year? Or is he just not wanting to change things too drastically? Because Joe Burrow likes Zach Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly a factor. Is Joe Burrow, and it's if I had to make the Cleveland comp, it wouldn't be Browns wise; it would be Cavs wise. And what Joe Burrow means to the Bengals is similar to what LeBron meant to the Cavaliers pre-title, and like the impact and he doesn't have the same control. The NBA is a different beast than the NFL, of course, when it comes to player control and things like that. But yeah, I mean, if you're the Bengals and you see Joe Burrow talking about happiness and all of those things, if Joe says, hey, I believe in Zach, we don't have enough talent, and I think everyone agrees, you'd have to be pretty silly to not think they have enough talent. I believe in Zach. I believe in this coaching staff. Let's just get more talent. Are you going to go against him knowing that it's going to make him upset at this stage? I wouldn't. Now, if they add talent this offseason and Zach struggles again and they don't win again, well, then you got to do something. And me personally, I would have had a heart-to-heart with Joe and maybe made a decision. But, yeah, I think the Bengals are sticking with Zach for a bunch of reasons. One is Mike Brown is patient. They believe in him, and Joe believes in him. And if Joe believes in him and you're 50-50 on it, well, that's a heck of a tiebreaker to lean inside with. So I do understand that side of it. Even if it were me, I probably would have looked at it and said, you know, from a 5,000-foot view, it's probably time to move on after 7 seasons.
I'm just looking at the Bengals have the 10th pick coming up in the draft. Just your thoughts on needs and, you know, obviously you got to get Burrow some help.
Yeah, I mean, they just need some playmakers on defense. I mean, that's the biggest thing. Is part of the reason why this Bengals team, every time they play the Browns, it is a dogfight, is because there aren't many teams whose top playmakers can match up with the Bengals' top playmakers, and the Browns can, and that's tough. And much like the Browns have been pretty poor on offense, the Bengals have done that defensively over the past couple of years. And so can you find a playmaker that's going to give you the ability to build around this young rookie contract defensive player? And preferably it would be in the trenches, right? Someone, a defensive tackle, defensive end. That's what they need. Will they be able to find it with the 10th pick? I don't know. Those guys are hard to come by. And so we'll see. Regardless, they have to add significant talent to their defense to raise the floor of their defense. So we're not talking about a team losing 47-42 to the Bears and 39-38 to Justin Fields and the Jets. I mean, just some embarrassing losses that they dealt or that they suffered this season.
James, I have 20 seconds. Does Dan Pitcher get a head coaching job, and is it in Cleveland?
I think there's a 25% chance that he gets a head coaching job. And if it were me, I would try to dodge the Browns. I think the Ravens should be interested in Dan Pitcher. Clearly, I'm high on him, but would not shock me one bit if Cleveland makes a run at him and tries to hire him.
Great to have you with us, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks, fellas.
James Rapine, our former coworker, now in Cincinnati doing all kinds of things with the Bengals. And he joined us on the Make It Right Call Kyle Wright hotline. Change your thought on a young, hot coordinator? Baskin just gave me a visual cue on that one. I'll tell you what he said when we come back.